Pirate Pods. We're here with the boys from San Francisco band Elephone. Boys, can you all introduce yourselves and tell us what you do in the band?
I'm Dan. I play bass and keyboards sometimes.
I'm Terry and I play guitars.
I'm Ryan. I play guitar and sing.
I'm Mike. I drum.
Cool.
All day. I bang on my drum all day.
I bet you do.
I bang on
my drum. You are married.
Question we had was we wanted to know where the name Elephone comes from.
Sort of a just a nonsensical word that we, Ryan and I were sitting in a bar one day and we just started playing around with different words, but we did decide that it is a combination of our favorite meat and our favorite thing to throw.
Your favorite meat and your favorite thing to throw?
Yeah. You can figure that out.
Run with that.
Excellent.
Take it home, sleep with it.
Touchdown.
How did you guys all meet?
Terry and I both grew up in Los Angeles and playing in separate bands. And Terry moved up here, 10 years ago there, something like that?
I've lived here 10 years,
yeah. And I followed suit not long after and just decided to play together. You know, we were both like kind of in limbo musically. And we were like back and forth from LA, San Francisco, writing music and recording, and eventually it was sort of inevitable. I made the move, just came up, started back.
And we met Dan, about a year ago?
About a year ago, yeah.
And he filled the role of two people. We had a keyboard player and a bass player, and we, one of them was abducted by aliens, and the other one was murdered in a freak jack-in-the-box incident, and so Dan filled the role of two people, and Mike we met up in Portland, and we are stealing him away from his life and his other bands.
So I wanted to talk about the new record, The Camera Behind the Camera Behind the Camera. How are you feeling about this release compared to your last one, Shivers?
It was The Shivering.
The Shivering, sorry.
Research.
It gives you the shivers.
This is the first record that we actually really worked on in a pre-production sort of way, and like recorded the whole thing ourselves before we even went into the studio, and it was done, and then we threw it all away and started over again from scratch. So it's like we're really proud about this as like a complete record. It sounds, you know, from the beginning to the end, like a movement of music. And so yeah, this is like this is really the real deal, whereas the other ones have been sort of experiments with EPs and all the different things that we can do.
I was just really happy with the way we just went in and did it, where it was, you know, no Pro Tools editing, we just played it, we dumped it.
Yeah,
took a couple weekends, there it is, you know, what you have.
So it happened pretty fast for you guys?
Yeah. We worked with a really cool producer, Chris Klein, who did Trail of the Dead. He's one of the owners of 3M Records, our label.
Right.
Yeah, it was cool.
So Hemlock 3 is a standout track there for everyone. It's had a little bit of airplay. Some bands like to talk about like meanings and where songs come from. Can you guys give us anything about this one? Or
no.
No information?
Any other one but that.
Any other one but
that. We are playing at the Hemlock tonight.
I have two personal favorites, actually. And I was going to ask you a little bit about those.
I'll tell you something about songs and what they're about. Just so, you know, we could just lump it all into one. I write very stream of conscious.
Right.
Like I don't set out to write about like a specific subject.
Right.
It's mainly about an emotion or feeling that I'm going through at a time period. So to me, this whole last record is basically about the same thing. It's just that it's not about a specific thing. It's about one emotion that I felt and brought in from other emotions of other members of the band. So I can't say like this song's about a girl that dumped me. This song is about a bird that flew in my window. And you know, I mean, it's just like there's not like a specific thing that you can say. I like to kind of throw out words and piece them together, and then you know, you can interpret it however you want. It means something for you. I can tell you what it maybe is about, but I think it's better that you just kind of leave it up in the air and let someone kind of take it in and like let them feel their own way about it.
I was having, that's actually how I felt about the title song, Camera Behind the Camera Behind the Camera. The very stream of conscious.
Actually, I'll tell you the process of that song, how that song was written. It was originally just an instrumental that was going to kind of take on this, like, sort of like William Burroughs kind of like rapping through the whole thing, just sort of like stream of conscious talking and kind of like fading in and out. And then we went on a tour up north, and we were driving into the van. I just started scribbling words down about like what I was seeing out the window and like things that I was feeling. And you know, there's like three more pages of words that come out of that, you know. And I kind of just said, I'm going to relate this to that music, the title track, Camera on the Camera, because we were writing that record at the time. I'm just going to take that music and think about that while I'm writing these words down. Not necessarily to put them in, but just to like get an overall feeling of what, you know, what I want this record to feel like to me. And it just sort of came out. Like all of a sudden a melody started happening, and
I kind of wrote that one in the studio.
Yeah, that song kind of wrote itself while we were recording the record.
I love
just
that.
Just to
one.
Go in and put it down, you know, yeah. Three practices and then go drop it.
We were really surprised how well it came out. Does come from a Chuck Palahniuk novel. Is it Diary or
Haunted?
Is it Haunted? I always say Diary.
Yeah.
But that was sort of our lens too for the whole album. Sort of like, you know, going deeper and deeper and deeper to try to find the most honest place and finding out that even that is sort of fabricated. If you're trying to be too honest, then you're being phony being honest. That's what this novel is about.
Right. So I noticed there's a lot of literary references as well as on your websites, as well as a lot of references to films and stuff. Are you guys pulling a lot of inspiration from?
My inspiration almost solely comes from film and literature.
Right.
Music to me is like what I do. It's like that's what I do. So I need to go outside of that to find things that you know inspire me, and you know, good films, bad films, great classic literature to like Mad Magazine. You know, it's like, you know, just the written word to me is important. And so yeah, I reference that. I reference a lot of different books and authors.
The kind of music that we're inspired by too is sort of like has literary vision. You know, you look at the world, read it, and try to find just deeper meanings of things.
Can you guys give us a few favorites out there? Movies, books that like definitely stand out inspirations for you?
I'm going through this author right now named Jonathan Carroll. Wrote a book called The Wooden Sea, S-E-A. It's got like a little cult following, but it's not getting the recognition that they deserve. Films, you know, it's so hard for me because I just watch films. I don't have my top 10 favorite films of all time.
Little Miss Sunshine.
There's bad movies
good.
And there's good movies, and then there's all of them that you like pretty much.
I mean, you know. One of the films that really inspired me was After Hours, Martin Scorsese's After Hours. I love that film.
So. When Ryan and I were first sort of like brainstorm band, like we were sharing Haruki Murakami novels back and forth. That was our big deal. Like, that was where we realized that like, okay, we can kind of see where we want to go artistically the same.
With those influences and stuff and everything you guys got going on, you have all of these comparisons coming at you as well. And you read the articles and the write-ups on you right now, everyone's comparing you guys to some pretty big names. Early REM, The Cure, Bauhaus. Is this a hindrance to you? Is this a compliment? How do you feel about comparison?
Those three is a huge compliment.
Those are all bands I like and listen to as a kid, so.
Yeah.
As long as we're not getting a, you know, compared indie band, because that's sort of our scene and we're on indie labels and we, you know, we're into just like doing it all ourselves. But we're not trying to make obscure music. We're just doing what we do, and you know, I have no problem having a bigger audience.
Right. So as far as being part of a movement in San Francisco, do you feel there is a movement here? And what does it mean to be a band in San Francisco right now?
I think there's a huge movement right now. I think it's the best it's been in the 10 years I've been here.
I still feel like it's squeaking, you know, it's like trying to get up the hill, and it just like no definition to me of what it is, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not.
It's a lot of good bands.
I mean, you put a name on it, it becomes something else and a whole other monster. But like, I think right now there's just like there's a lot of great bands that you can go see. That we're trying to play, you know, with the collective of bands, but it just doesn't seem to work out that way. I mean, San Francisco is kind of a diverse place to be.
Even Rogue Wave, you know, has been around for a long time in different names, different bands.
They're doing pretty well these days.
Yeah. So it's I think that you don't have to all sound the same, be part of like the same sort of I don't know, sound or.
All the bands from this town sound like this.
Yeah. It's more about having the collective experience of being a band that's willing to work really hard and just be yourself throughout all the training happens.
Right. Do you feel that for some, I mean, I wonder sometimes, does San Francisco sort of get looked over?
I think so.
If you guys aren't all cohesive and part of a particular sound, do you think San Francisco sort of
for such a big city, you know, you would think we get a lot more attention from the, I don't know, music media. I think it's starting to turn around. I think people are starting to look at it now, but
in a way, I mean, I think, like, looked over by who, you know, like, it's you just go do what you do.
There's just
it's
a lot of good bands that, you know, just don't ever really get the attention of major record companies, you know. There's a few that kind of get out quickly, and it's not like, if you're in Seattle or Austin or even Chapel Hill.
To influences and stuff. I know that hate and disgust and loathe can also be a big inspiration in things. I mean, what are you guys looking at around you that you think, okay, that is something I don't like and that inspires me?
What do you mean, we live in San Francisco? We live in San Francisco, we love everything.
I hate everything.
I hate everything and everyone.
I hate people that don't mustard, that just use mayonnaise. I basically hate white people.
So we have a few.
Was that like a dig? Am I supposed to mention politics?
She wanted to get political there.
Yeah. I think the politics was written in there.
Yeah, I don't think that's less a given. Nothing has to be said.
We'll leave the politics to every move.
Okay, so we like to save the end of our little interviews here for a couple of quirky questions. And these are ones, no matter how much you hate the question, you have to answer it for me.
Do it.
What record do you own but don't want anyone to...
I've got a record right now that I absolutely love, but most people would cringe when I said I own it. And that's it's an album by a band called Dredge. Most people don't know that band. But
it's a heavy metal band, right?
It's actually like a prog pop band, if you will.
Okay.
But I love it. I'm totally inspired by it.
I have actually own the... album, the LP of Murphy Party All the Time.
Oh, that's awesome. Nice. Yeah. I grew up here. I am an Irish fan. I know that shit.
All right, I'll give it to you.
First concert you ever went to?
Ooh, I know it.
Huey Lewis. Jaws count.
Huey Lewis in the News. It was Boston Garden.
I was
14, 13 years old.
I was 15 years old. My buddy's dad worked for a record company, and we went and saw Living Color with opening band. It was a punk rock band called All at a club that used to exist called The Stone, and we got in as underage kids because of his dad.
I played The Stone. That's crazy.
When I was like a little kid, I got to like kind of sneak
at what was Gazzari's at the time. Now it's called something else.
Gazzari.
On Sunset Boulevard.
Gazzari.
But the... One experience I remember, it wasn't the first concert, was getting arrested at a Loverboy and the Hooters concert.
And the Hooters?
It was because Bill Bailey pissed in the parking lot on a car, and then the cops came and busted us, and we were underage, we were drinking, and so we got handcuffed, and we got FI cards.
If it makes you feel better, the bass player for Loverboy died by drowning in the bay.
That does make me feel better.
Okay, our last and final question, we want to know, what is a vampire headache?
You'll have to ask Ryan that.
That's a question for Ryan.
What is a vampire headache? Is that a lyric?
It's on your sweats.
If you don't know, you find out well, that kind of thing.
See, those are kind of secrets. Those are like inside telephone, you know.
Those
are up for interpretation.
Another interview here in San Francisco. We're with Elephone. Thank you, Elephone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.